shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What are you looking up, bud?
I'm trying to spell out.
You're an idiot. It's not spelled like that. How many times I got to tell you?
Well, you're crazy.
I'm telling you, Kraftwerk is spelled K-R-A-F-T-W-E-R-K.
Yeah, I'm kind of spelled German style. What?
It's not spelled W-O-R-K. They spell it the way the Germans spell work, W-E-R-K. We're having a discussion about Kraftwerk being, if you remember the group Kraftwerk, Kraftwerk has been alluded to by a great many of the early of the founding fathers of hip-hop and rap. They've pointed to Kraftwerk as a group that was very inspirational. Now, the irony of this is astounding, given the fact that Kraftwerk is a group from Germany, a techno group from Germany, if you will. And this group from Germany, a nation that was the birthplace of this philosophy of the super Aryan race, destroyed in a world war, rebuilding itself out of the ashes as the matrix of American hip-hop. The irony, the poetry, the colossal historical significance of that. I mean, you can't, it just ain't big enough, you know.
I don't understand what you talk about. Don't you get them out, all these white boys, they're the ones that gave a lot of inspiration to black people.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that formed, the foundational elements of hip-hop, but because American jazz has a lot to do with that. I remember going to jazz concerts way back in the day, when it was a sax player and a drummer and somebody on congas, and there's somebody up there. Poetry readings, you know. I mean, if you want to get right down to it, the poetry readings of the Beatniks, where they were being accompanied by a jazz sax player. You don't think so?
Man, I don't know, you know. That sounds like a lot of white people stuff, you know.
A lot of white people stuff? I'm telling you, a lot of these shows that I saw, these were black artists. It was black jazz, you know.
Yeah, but most of Beatniks was white.
There were black beatniks, but yeah, I suppose the white beatniks, I guess, were trying to be what the black jazz musicians already were. Now, let me just don't talk anymore, because I got to find this stupid thing, bud. Now that you downloaded the thing, I don't know where it is.
It's under Kraftwerk, spelled K-R-A-N.
I know how it's spelled. So here it is. This is the song. This is one of them. Trans. What the hell is this called, man?
What the people like Africa Mombasa and them in New York, you know, listen to this.
Africa who?
Africa Bambasso. Nah, man, Mombasso.
Mombasso or?
Nah, it's Africa Bambasso.
Will you shut up, bud?
You don't know what a man's name is?
I don't get it, man. How is this like inspiring hip-hop?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, I remember this album because I played the song that we played when I was in Album Rock Radio.
Yeah, let's turn it up a little bit so I can hear it. I want a groove to it. Yeah. 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 I can see how they do that.
All right, fine. Turn it down, man. That's a song called, by the way, if you call that a song, it's called Trans Europe Express by Kraftwerk. So what do you think of that, bud, huh?
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting how that everything is done.
Well, I mean, a culture is something that is shared. And cultures influence other cultures, and the next thing you know, you've got a whole new thing that happens, and it's impossible, absolutely impossible, to think of the world as a place that stays static in terms of race and culture. If we look at the human race, and the fact that we're the most adaptable creatures on Earth because we go places. What do? We go places. We go to the North Pole. We go to the South Pole. We travel to this continent and that continent. Human beings are constantly on the move. And we're always looking to see about this. And then we want to go over here and look at that. And then we want to go down here and look at this. And it's impossible to think of humans as something anything other than a very migratory species. We're always moving and we're always adapting, which means that we borrow and we use, and that's been the history of the human race. There's only been two things. I've already told you guys about one that have spontaneously, well, I shouldn't say. Well, I think I will. There's only two things that have spontaneously developed in humankind. Actually, only two places that have spontaneously developed writing, which was, I mentioned, Mexico and the Middle East. All other cultures on Earth used what is called either the blueprint or they cloned or copied directly. There's writing, and then there is farming, which developed spontaneously in, I think, the Middle East and maybe one other place. And all the other places, they learned it by migrating humans saying, hi, how are you doing? Well, I'm fine. Well, see this stuff? Yeah, we plant it. We don't go running around the globe looking for it. Oh, that's interesting. Here, why don't you try it? Okay, thanks. Goodbye. Bye.
Like Johnny Appleseed or something like that. Maybe that's what I started.
Johnny Appleseed? No, well, I don't know.
Well, that's exactly what Johnny Appleseed did. You know, if you look up Johnny Appleseed, he'd take out the Appleseed.
What? Johnny Appleseed?
Yeah, he taught people how to go to Apple.
Well, no, he didn't, man. I don't even know what Johnny Appleseed was. Didn't he dump a bunch of apple seeds, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's that got to do with teaching people how to grow an apple, man? He just dumped a bunch of... What the hell was he doing anyway?
I don't know. Going around growing up an apple. If you got what he did with Johnny Appleton took a seed, then...
How did his name get to be Johnny Appleton all of a sudden?
That's how names evolve.
Are you guys messing with me or something?
No, Johnny Apple. Well, I don't know. I don't know what he's saying. Well, you're saying Johnny Appleseed, Johnny Appleton.
Johnny Appleseed. What do you mean, Johnny Appleton? Johnny Appleseed.
There ain't no name like Appleseed. I'm trying to think of how that name developed.
Who cares, man? There ain't no guy named Johnny Appleseed. How did the name develop? That ought to be something. Why don't you look that up, bud? See if there's actually a human being on the face of the earth. And would have to be Anglo-Saxon or some English-speaking culture. Is there anybody with the last name Appleseed? Check that one out.
That's what I'm saying, Harry. That's why I said Appleton. Yeah, but how do you know that's the way the name went?
How do you know that Appleton came out of Appleseed?
That's the evolution.
You don't know that. That's if there was anybody named Appleseed. I don't know how the hell we got off on this. I was telling you guys about the adaptability of the human species, and the next thing I know, you got me talking about Johnny Appleseed. But the fact is, it was writing and farming. But anyway, humans learn from other humans. That's what we do. We learn from other human beings. We teach each other things. We don't do it because we're necessarily filled with the milk of human kindness. We trade. That's what the human race did. Well, you got what I want, and I got something you want. Here, you take that. Thanks. See you later. Bye. Go back beyond the mountains where you belong. Get out of here. Okay? So, you're talking about the music of Kraftwerk making its way to New York and being listened to by this group of young African-American musicians, influenced by R&B, influenced by jazz, years of listening to Motown, rock and roll. Now they hear this, and it's something that they take this, the whatever sensibility they had listening to jazz and R&B, and they say, I can use this, apply this spoken word thing that was happening with poetry to jazz and put it to something different, you know.
What do you mean, like from jazz?
Yeah, so they're not doing some rap, you know, it's not just the poetry reading to jazz music. Now, all of a sudden, it's its own percussion instrument, the word. So, I don't even want to get into it because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. All I know is that those guys were a significant thing.
Yeah, they look like freaks, too. What are you talking about, just because they're white? No, the way they cut their hair.
Well, they look like weird asses, there's no question about it. I don't know if you want to go as far as to say they look like freaks, the way they cut their hair.
Yeah, pretty weird, though.
Anyway, the group was Kraftwerk, and that's what they done did, baby. All right, it's News and Information Hour here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We want to talk a little bit about Magic Johnson and the group that he leads buying the Dodgers and other stuff here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Get your backstage pass, watch our live streaming video cast, listen to the archives, become educated, get a BSP, get your podcast, get with it, baby. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Yeah!
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
A little homage tonight to Kraftwerk. watching on Phil TV and HD, you see the group there from the 70s, and they bore no resemblance to anything having to do with the 70s. They look more like they'd be right at home right now. They have the hair. They got the whole, I don't know, they got that whole Gary Numan vibe, you know.
Y'all gonna say it look like Gary Numan had done that song. Yeah, remember that song, Cars in Cars? Do-do-do-do-do-do. Driving my car, and then I'm in on a street. They're doing that.
You have to sing a song, man. Yeah, we don't need to hear the whole thing, bud, but I know the song you're talking about. Yeah, they're, it was part of that sort of techno, it was the late 70s, early 80s. The Europeans, like the Japanese, so traumatized by war and the amazement, the amazing things that America had given to them, you know, because of the gloriousness of our culture, that it blew their European and Japanese minds. And out of it came Godzilla and plastic hair.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
What? I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, so there you go. Kraftwerk, fantastic. All right, now. Let's get on to something else, man, because this is creeping me out, all this Kraftwerk talk. No, they're good, you know, as far as it goes. A group led by Magic Johnson, the Lakers Hall of Famer, whose championship lineage and community involvement have made him one of the most beloved of sports figures. Where are my glasses, bud?
I don't know.
Made him one of the most beloved of sports figures. They have purchased or are interested in purchasing and have been given the Los Angeles Dodger bid. He will be the next owner, selected Tuesday, of the Dodgers. The Dodgers made the announcement Tuesday night. The Associated Press reported the winning bid was for $2 billion, which nearly doubles the record amount of $1.1 billion paid for a sports franchise by Stephen Ross for the NFL's Miami Dolphins in 2009. Wow, that's I didn't know the Dolphins went for $1 billion. Where have I been? You know?
You probably think Wayne Huizenga still own them.
Yeah. I do. My mind has been on other things, man. I don't know. The decision all but caps 3 years of turmoil surrounding the team, during which the Dodgers descended into mediocrity as Frank McCourt spent more than $25 million in a futile fight to retain ownership. In an auction under the auspices of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court, McCourt chose the Johnson Group over the St. Louis Rams owner Stan Kroenke. I don't know how you pronounce that guy's name, excuse me. And a partnership of hedge fund billionaire Stephen Cohen and biotech billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong. Boy, that sounds suspect, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sounds weird.
Are you kidding me? A partnership of a hedge fund guy. If there's anything that makes people want to retch, it's just the words hedge fund. Whether or not we know what we're talking about, just the sound of that alone.
Yeah, hi. I run a hedge fund, and this guy is from Mongolia, and he builds, like, computers.
Nah, that doesn't sound like baseball to me. I could be wrong. If the deal closes as expected, the Dodgers would be owned by an entity called Guggenheim Baseball Partners.
What?
Well, that's the group of, speaking of hedge funds. No, it's actually the group that put the financing together for this thing. That would be the name of the entity. These are Guggenheim Baseball Partners. Guggenheim is the company that put the funding together, and the baseball partners part of that would be Guggenheim and Magic Johnson and a number of other people, which includes Stan Kasten, the former president of the Braves and the Washington Nationals, who's expected to wind up as the team's day-to-day top day-to-day executive. Stan Kasten is a phenomenal baseball executive who was behind the ascendancy of the Atlanta Braves through the 90s. Mark Walder, chief executive officer of the financial service firm Guggenheim Partners, who would become the controlling owner. Uh-oh. All of a sudden, I don't like this.
Why?
What does that mean? He'll be the controlling owner. So he's the majority guy? So what's Magic Johnson got to do with it? You know, I hope this isn't one of these things where they're telling him, you know, Magic, yeah, sure, you're our guy. They're going to pull the rug out from underneath him. I'm smelling it already.
Wait a minute. What are you, all of a sudden... Why didn't you give him a chance?
Because I've seen this stuff before. I'm telling you, I've seen these partnerships. Everybody's one happy family, and then they finally get into the deal, and somebody's going to buy someone out. They're not going to have all of these guys involved in this group. Somebody, you know, there's going to be a number of them who are going to want to get bought out. And there's going to be at least one guy who's going to want to buy everybody out. And I just hope it ain't some guy who's the chief executive officer of Guggenheim Partners, if you'll pardon me for saying.
But you want to be magic.
I guess, yeah. It's the reason why I thought it was a pretty good thing in the first place. We all know the name. We know that Magic Johnson, in his own right, is a successful businessman. We know that he knows the L.A. sports market. He knows the he knows sports. He certainly is familiar with the climate and the fan base here, and so on and so forth. So, you know, and he knows about fans. I mean, look at when he was a player, he knew how to keep the customer satisfied, baby. That was why Magic Johnson, one of the reasons why he was so popular, he knew how to play to the crowd. All right. The next guy on the list here of partners, Peter Guber, Warriors co-owner and chief executive of Mandalay Entertainment, who declined to comment when contacted at Tuesday night's Warriors game. Guber and Johnson are partners in minor league baseball's Dayton Dragons and have small stakes in the Dodgers already. Guber's also a Hollywood guy, I think, like a producer or something. The bulk of the funding to buy the Dodgers came from Guggenheim Partners, a Chicago-based financial services firm, but Walter's not expected to play a day-to-day role. Then why is he called the controlling owner? Not expected. You better have that in writing, Jack, and any guy that's a controlling owner is not going to give away anything.
Yeah, well, you're all excited about it now, man. What, did you change your mind?
Yeah.
Maybe I will change my mind. So what? So what if I do? Anyway, the sale must be confirmed by the court in a hearing on April the 13th. The transaction is set to close by April the 30th, which just so happens to be the same day that Mr. McCourt must pay his ex-wife $131 million in a divorce settlement. So the money is due, and by all indications, things going swimmingly, as they must, it'll all get tidied up by the 30th, and then that money is transferred to her, and I guess that's the end of the road for Frank McCourt. Now, here's the other part of this that's fascinating. As part of the agreement, the Dodgers said McCourt and certain affiliates of the purchasers, that means that Frank McCourt and then agents, or, well, they're calling them affiliates, so they are individuals who have a business or are in business with the people that are buying the Dodgers, but it isn't the people that are buying the Dodgers. These are affiliates of theirs. They and Frank McCourt, who's a third party here, they will acquire the land surrounding Dodger Stadium, including its parking lots, for $150 million.
What for?
Because the parking is where it's at. Frank McCourt, I know he wanted that parking. So here's what they said, obviously. McCourt wanted that parking. I had no idea that parking, in a day and age of television contracts, TV contracts, and the enormous merchandising deals that they do, I had no idea that parking was still worth as much as they, you know, say that it is. But, you know, far be it from me. But here's the thing. Obviously, the people buying the Dodgers said, well, we don't want Frank McCourt to own outright all of the parking, so we want to have our hand in that as well. We don't want to be involved in that. So we have, quote, affiliates of the purchasers, okay? So that, what is an affiliate? It's somebody who's in business with. You're not the purchasers themselves, but you're in business with Magic Johnson and Caston and the rest of those guys. Frank McCourt has agreed to take them in as partners for this land that they're purchasing, that is Dodger Stadium parking. McCourt paid $430 million in 2004 to buy the team, Dodger Stadium, and 250 acres of land that included the parking lots from the Fox division of Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, a sale that left the team with about $50 million in cash at the time. The team's debt stood at $579 million as of January, according to a court filing. So that means that they not only are buying the ball club for $2 billion, but they got to wipe that debt out. Because they know sale takes place until all of that debt is dealt with.
So that means it costs $2.5 billion.
Yeah. Or maybe they're including that. It's quite possible that that's included in the price there. So there it is. The Dodgers purchased by Magic Johnson. So now that we see here the a couple of the particulars of this thing, that the actual controlling of the controlling of the Dodgers business will be done by this guy Walter. He is, quote, the chief executive. He will become the controlling owner. Does that mean he has majority, a majority stake? I don't know. We'll find out. Anyway, I like the idea that Magic Johnson's involved in the deal. The rest of these guys, I could care less.
Doesn't sound too good anymore, does it?
Whatever. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back. It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Reports Newt axes his staff, but he pledges to stay in the race. Well, that's very encouraging. That's very encouraging if you're a Newt Gingrich fan. That's very encouraging if you're a Newt Gingrich voter. Or maybe it's not. I don't know what that means, you know.
What's it mean?
It means he fired everybody, but he's staying in the race. It means that he's expecting a miracle. That's what it means. It means that he's saying, I can't afford to keep a staff. I can't afford to do much of anything. But I'm staying in the race because, well, I'm staying in the race because I want my voice heard. Well, Newt, I think your voice has been heard, man.
Newt, keep on talking that same stuff he's talking.
Yeah, he just wants to keep on yakking that same jazz he's been yakking, which was discredited a long time ago by Romney in that debate where Gingrich thought that he'd pulled out the stops and really caught Romney with his hand in the cookie jar talking about his investments in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then Romney turned it around on him and said, well, guess what, Jack, that's where your money is too. Romney saw that coming like 3 days out. That's what I think convinced a lot of people, myself included, that Gingrich thought that he was just God's gift to the world of brains. He thought that there wasn't anything anybody could pull out on him that he couldn't deal with. And Romney was way ahead of him. Way ahead of him. Anyway, Newt Gingrich's floundering campaign announced a major shakeup last night, including the departure of a top operative, but insisted it was staying the course all the way to the convention. Woo! Gingrich laid off one-third of his staff and replaced campaign manager Michael Krull with longtime aide Vince Haley. The drastic changes come as Gingrich languishes in third place in most delegate counts, behind frontrunner Mitt Romney and the other frontrunner, Rick Santorum, who ain't that much of a frontrunner either. Pundits have long believed that Santorum would have a better shot at toppling Romney if Gingrich dropped out, allowing the conservative base to unite around a single candidate, and then that way they could split it evenly down the middle and make sure that Obama wins the election in November. But those conservatives have such a very, very important message, they just simply must get it said, even if it means they lose another presidential race. Jeez.
Yeah, but what do you expect them to do if they really believe in it and everything like that?
Okay, fine. Well, then maybe people ought to get smart. Maybe people on the Republican side ought to get smart. Here's what they got to say. The conservatives over there have more juice and more pull than the progressive, the really super liberals on the Democratic side. The super liberals on the Democratic side, which I guess you could put, you could say is like their Tea Party, you know, the progressives, way progressives. Those cats are like the Tea Party of the Democratic Party, but they got no pull. They got nobody's paying any attention to them. No serious Democrat pays any attention to them. You can see how much attention Obama's paying to them when he talks about Guantanamo staying open and the Patriot Act getting extended. He could care less. Okay?
They say he owes them.
Oh, he owes them. My ass, he owes them. Obama won that election, and Obama knows why he won that election, because he got the middle-of-the-road people, man. He got a lot of those independents, a lot of those people, well, I could vote Democrat, I could vote Republican, I don't know. He got the Main Street USA people. That's who he got. He owes them.
They're the ones who went out, got out to vote and everything, and walked around and stuffed envelopes and stuff.
What are you guys doing anyway? You just talking just to hear yourselves talk? Is this stuff that you hear on TV?
Yeah, that's what they were saying the other day.
Well, quit quoting crap you hear on TV.
Sound like you were talking there, man. You go, quit, quit, quit.
Yeah, you know, quit, 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 quit.
God, man, what you been eating?
Hey, watch it, okay? What I've been eating. Anyway, pundits have long believed that Santorum would have a better chance. Yeah, sure. Sure he would.
You don't think he'd have a better chance without Gingrich?
Have a better chance at what? Have a better chance at being in second? He'd have a much stronger second place showing? Yeah, that's what he'd have a better chance at. Man, I've seen these guys on TV, these Republican heavy hitters, you know, these talking heads. A lot of these guys that are, I would say that they represent sort of the brain trust or the I don't know, man, the grown-up part of, there's a word from that movie, that Tinker Tailor, whatever, where they used to say, come see the grown-ups.
Yeah.
That's the grown-ups in the Republican Party. I think that, those people think it's Romney all the way. And they think that this dalliance with Santorum and Gingrich, enough is enough, and they want to get rid of those two clowns, and they want to get it going. Now, we've seen this before, and I can tell you, in the lead-up to elections, it's generally thought that if a party is not united coming out of a convention, they're going to get their ass kicked. Now, I remember that the Democrats coming out of 76, they looked beautiful. They loved Jimmy Carter. He was a beautiful thing. Meanwhile, you had Watergate. You had Ford. It was a disaster. And it was still close. That's what a lot of people don't remember. They don't, everybody looks back in the 70s and Nixon was a disaster, this and that. But that election in 76 was really close, man. You had Ford, who, to be honest with you, and people will say what they want to say, but I know, and I'm telling you the objective facts of the 1976 election, Ford was on his way to making people forget, at least forget in the short haul, all the damage that had been done by Watergate and the Nixon presidency. And Ford was beginning to make his mark. And by the by election time, it could have gone either way. It wasn't a slam dunk for Carter at all. Now, and that was the Republicans coming out of that, the Democrats coming out of that convention all united. Now comes 80, and the Democrats are shot to hell. The Republicans have got a little bit of a fight because, was it Bush? Is it Reagan? It never was going to be Bush. Ronald Reagan was the man. And he came out of that convention. He was the man. I remember they were thinking about having Bush as the co-presidency. They were going to have some co-presidency. Remember that? But in any event, Reagan was the man. So now here comes this convention, and Santorum and Gingrich have muddied things so much that the Republicans may come out of that convention not really all that united, you know? I mean, they may still look like a bunch of stumble bums with Santorum yakking his stuff, whatever it is, no one cares. Gingrich yakking his stuff, whatever it is, no one cares. And people just looking at the Republicans going, you know what, they still got their head up their rear ends. I'm voting for Obama.
But you're going to do.
I mean, if Romney's the nominee, I might vote for Romney, and I'll tell you why. I think I think we needed President Obama when we had him. I think we needed to inject this country with that kind of thinking and that kind of approach to problems. We did. I don't think there was anything wrong with that. I think it was I may vote for Romney because I think, now's the time to perhaps adjust a little bit. I like the fact that Romney was the author of a health plan in Massachusetts.
Yeah, you don't sound like you know what you're talking about.
Why don't you shut up?
What are you talking about, man?
What do you mean, what am I talking about? You guys asked me who I'm voting for, right?
Yeah. You gotta sound like you know what you're talking about.
I know what I'm talking about. Who are you voting for?
Nobody.
So you know what you're talking about, huh?
Yeah. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I ain't voting for nobody.
Me neither.
Oh, okay. So you guys are smarter than me, huh?
Way smarter. I ain't voting for none of these guys, and I mean it. You guys are stumble bum.
Well, okay, that's the difference between me and you guys.
You're all talking about, I might vote for Romney and I might vote for Obama.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, on second thought. On second thought, ladies and gentlemen, I think I might vote for Romney and I might vote for Obama. Both of them. I might vote for both those guys, even though it's against the law.
Very funny.
That's what you sound like.
I'm telling you that I gave you as honest an answer as I could, okay? If you don't like it, then you don't like it.
Well, let's start crying.
I ain't crying.
Yeah. You're going to vote for Romney. I don't know why you're voting for the guy. Otherwise, so you're going to vote for Obama.
Why aren't you going to vote for Obama?
Who's Obama?
I said Obama.
Because I think now's the time to bring back a little financial sense to things, okay? Maybe I think now's the time to start, you know, reining it in a little bit. Because maybe I think that Romney, at least with Romney, you got a conservative when it comes to the economy, but also a guy that's enough of a pragmatist to have put together a health care plan for the people of Massachusetts, because he recognizes the impact that that kind of expense has on an economy. So he's not a dyed-in-the-wool philosophical conservative no matter what, even if it's a bad idea. I don't like guys like that. You got to be able to, you got to be flexible, man. You got to use what you can use. Whatever works. You know?
Yeah, so why don't you just vote for Obama, because that's what he's doing.
Maybe I still will vote for Obama. Boy, you guys crack me up with that, man. You can't pronounce the word. You think you know all about the guy. You can't pronounce his name.
I said Obama.
No, you didn't. You said Obama. All right, coming back here at a world-famous Phil Hendry show, more news from our news sources. Looks like that, what's her name, Martina Navratilova, she got her ass booted off of Dancing with the Stars. You want to know why?
She's a lesbian.
Exactly. I'm kidding. No, it's because she sucks when she dances. And other news, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Check it out, man. Our backstage pass and our live-streaming video of the show each and every night. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, how fat are you today?
What do you mean, how fat am I today?
Well, I'm on the diet.
Yeah, I know. You can ask me, how's the diet come? You have to say, how fat are you today?
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah, the diet's coming great, bud. Thanks for asking. How fat am I today? I'll tell you this much. I lost 5 pounds last week.
Yeah, I told my aunt about that, man. That's pretty damn good.
That's, you know, it is pretty good. It is pretty good. But here's the thing. You know, my metabolism, you know, when your metabolism changes, it speeds that weight loss up at the beginning. But then your body catches up to what's going on. There's that old thing about, now watch Bud will start asking all kinds of questions.
But you always think I'm stupid.
I don't think you're, why do I think you're, I don't think you're stupid. You're always asking dumb stuff. The time I said that the body thinks that it's in a famine, you're going, hey, your body can't think.
Yeah, well, you're talking about your body thinking stuff.
All I'm trying to say is the metabolism changes. Then when the metabolism finally gets the idea, I'm sorry, I don't know any other way of putting it, bud. When your body's metabolism gets the idea, oh, we're not eating as much food, that means we're not getting as much food, so I better hold on to the fat. That's what happens biochemically to the body. It starts holding on to the fat because it believes that there's some kind of a famine going on. So what you have to do then is you have to increase, obviously, your exercise. They also say that you need to return to a normal form of eating for maybe a day just to kind of shake things up a little bit. I don't subscribe to that thinking, man. I've lost weight before, and I didn't do any of that jazz. So I was just talking to Dan about these Starbucks, man.
Well, I went out and got you, you like those full-fat cafe latte.
Yeah, well, we ain't doing that no more, man, because these 20-ounce cafe lattes from Starbucks, these suckers are 339 calories.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. 339 calories, man. If I drink two of those a day, which I can easily do... Okay, so what are we talking about? We're talking about 700 calories, let's say, and I'm only eating 2,000. That's almost half, man, of what I'm consuming, what I should be consuming in a day. I'm drinking with coffee? Forget it.
What about them two chocolate bars you have, man? You didn't even count them.
What are you doing, man? Leaning over my shoulder and counting everything?
Yeah, there's another one. See these? I got these wrappers.
Yeah, look. Here the wrappers. Give me those wrappers. Are you guys collecting wrappers?
Yeah. I found the wrappers yesterday from the chocolate bars you ate.
Yeah, man. That's 200 more calories you want to count.
You guys are going behind me and collecting wrappers?
Yeah, here's another one.
Yeah.
Give me that, man. You ain't taking any wrappers from me.
Are you going to count them or not?
I thought I did count them.
That's 200 calories, man.
All right, I'll count the 200 calories. I don't give a damn. What do you guys think? You're punishing me or not? It's fine. Okay, so that's 200 calories. So I'm starting today, March 28th, Wednesday. I'm starting with 369.5 calories, 169 and a half, because the only coffee I had left was this latte, which I'm drinking right now.
You gonna drink that whole thing?
I'm probably not gonna drink the whole thing, no. But I'm drinking half. Let's just say I'm drinking half of this thing, man. It's 169 calories right there. I'm just knocking 169 calories into my Wednesday, plus those 200 calories because you busybody, nosy jackballs are telling me that I'm eating, chocolate bars, and I didn't think I was eating chocolate bars. Okay, fine. So that's 369 calories. I don't care. Good. All right. But in any event, you know, this is cool, man, and I'll tell you why it's cool, because I got something to look forward to now, man. This summer is going to be a good summer. You know, I'm going to have for the first time since before I got married, I may get it down to, you know, a reasonable weight here.
What's the skinniest what you've ever been?
As an adult?
Yeah, as an adult. How skinny you been?
As an adult, when I was 28 years old, I was 100. I was not. I was not. This was not a healthy weight for me. I was 145 pounds. I was 6 feet tall. That was me not eating. I wasn't sick, but I was living on coffee and cigarettes. I remember I was a music director in Miami, and I was working at WSHE in Miami, and I'd taken over the music director job there. And I just jumped into this gig like a maniac, man. I jumped into this music director gig like a maniac. I was there every morning at 6. Now, keep in mind, I had an air shift to do. So I had to be on the air at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, go to 2 to 6, doing an air shift. And I was at the station at 6 a.m. every morning, dubbing off music, putting music into the library. Then I had to see the record people, and then I had to do an air shift. My office was a freaking disaster.
But you said you didn't like meeting record people.
No, that was the part of the gig I didn't like at all. I'm not a social guy. And the part of the music director job that I did not like was I didn't mind meeting the record promotion people. They're fine. They're nice guys, and they have a record they want to promote, and I'm happy to sit down and listen to it, and I'm happy to talk to them. But this was the 70s, and so sometimes you'd have somebody come into your office, and they got a jar of Coke, or they have a little bottle of Coke.
Man, that sounds like heaven.
Oh, does it now? Well, it wasn't.
No, I mean for back then.
No, not for me, it wasn't.
Did you do any drugs?
I wasn't doing any drugs at that time. I wasn't doing any drugs. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing any drugs at all. I had this music director job. I had my girlfriend, and that's it. My life was about as dull. My life's always been dull. From the time I was like, it's always been a dull life. I've always been a working guy, and then I go home, and that's what it was when I was in my 20s. I mean, when I was, if I didn't have a girlfriend, I was out drinking and partying and doing, you know, what I did. But if I had any domesticity in my life, if there was a female in my life, it was always, you could ask any one of them that ever knew me, it was always like, oh, let's go home, watch TV, okay. Or, you know, something else.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, so I had this music director gig, and I'm up at 6, and I'm doing this gig, and then came the record promotion guys. Well, finally, the cat that was our program director at the time said it to me in no uncertain terms. He says, you got to start hanging out with these record guys, man. I want us to have a relationship with these record companies, and I want you to go out and hang with them, because I guess they complained that I wasn't hanging with them. that I wasn't going out partying, that I wasn't going to concerts, that I wasn't going to shows. And this is the kind of square, stupid guy that I've always been. I've always been this guy. I thought, well, why do I got to go to a concert or a show to know whether a record sounds good on our format or not? You know, why do I got to go to a concert or show to know whether or not I'm going to add the Elton John album? Of course I'm going to add the Elton John album. You know, I didn't have to go to a concert or a show when Dire Straits came. I said, we got to put the Dire Straits on our station because it sounded great. You know, but that was the game. So,
yeah, well, that's when you quit, right?
I did quit, and I left Miami, and I came to Los Angeles back in the late 70s when I was still a disc jockey, when I was still in music radio. So that was the history of my life right there. But I was 145 pounds then, and my ideal weight is around 200. I'm 6 feet tall, so it probably should be, you know, probably around 200, 210. And that's ideal. And I got a long way to go, man, before I hit that. But I can do it, and I can do it by midsummer. And with God's help and yours, and with the help of the United States Army and our affiliated military branches, by God, we will.
Phil Hendry will no longer be a fat ass.
Yes. Glory, hallelujah.
Thank you. Now, what do you mean, no longer a fat ass? Get out of here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. Don't forget, our website is philhendryshow.com. This is where you can get yourself your backstage pass, baby. And, you know, check out all of the marvelous and amazing things we have for you there at philhendryshow.com. Until tonight, later and greater, this is Phil Hendry for Bud Dickman.
Hi.
And Robert Leonard.
Bye.
Phil Hendry.